Welcome to the Lorraine Murphy Show. If you're anything like me, you want a successful, abundant business, epic energy, a growth mindset, vibrant health, and beautiful relationships. And this podcast sets out to help us achieve all of that together. I've been in the entrepreneurship arena for almost a decade now and have mentored hundreds of other business owners. So I know what goes on behind the scenes and what it takes to succeed. This podcast shares the tips, tricks, learnings, and lessons I lean on in order to blend the different facets of my life as an entrepreneur, author, wife, and mama to two gorgeous little humans. Let's jump in to today's episode. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Lorraine Murphy Show. I must say, it has been very weird not doing a podcast episode last week. It's very, very strange, this new rhythm. But we'll go back to weekly in the new year, I promise. So this week's episode, very, very excited to bring this one to you because earlier on this year, I got to spend some time with Chantal Millard, who is the CEO of Maggie Beer Holdings, which is the parent company of the Maggie Beer brand and also three other premium brands. I was fascinated by the dynamic between Chantal and such a household name of an entrepreneur like Maggie. And that loved the fact that her work revolves around food was an extra bonus for me as well. Chantal also earlier on this year led the recent acquisition of Hampers and Gifts Australia, which sounds like a fascinating process too. Finding the right support in our businesses is a constant focus for most business owners, and quite a few also harbor ambitions to one day sell their companies. So I'm thrilled to be bringing you this conversation with Chantal. In our chat, we cover the background to her career before joining the Maggie Beer brand, what the key responsibilities of her role as CEO are, a day in the life at home and at work for her, what the dynamic looks like between Chantal as the day-to-day lead of the business and the entrepreneurial nature of Maggie herself, her no surprises policy, and I loved this concept when she shared it with me. I hadn't heard of it before. The fascinating process behind creating new food products within the business. This is my happy place. The user guide for entrepreneurs on setting themselves up for success when handing over the reins to a CEO, an MD or a GM. What she looks for in businesses to acquire. How to make your business easy to buy from a buyer's perspective. And what business owners should be thinking about right now if that's their ultimate goal for their business. How she manages the many demands on her time and her energy. Her experiences with self-doubt and how she tames it, the books that have been most life and business changing for her, and also her words of advice for other execs who are aiming to reach the CEO seat in their own careers. So I really, really love this chat with Chantal. She has so many nuggets to share, and I think you'll really enjoy hearing, I guess, from a different perspective, instead of a business owner, instead we get to hear from the CEO today. So let's bring on myself and Chantal's chat. Chantal, welcome to my podcast. When we first met earlier on this year, I said I absolutely have to interview for the podcast. So I'm so glad we get to talk today. Thank you.
Thank you. It's really exciting to be here. This is my first ever podcast. So it's, very exciting.
Amazing. Oh, thank you. Thank you for being here. So the reason I was really excited to talk to you is that I feel like a lot of my podcast, we talk about the entrepreneurs. So we talk about the people who have come up with the initial idea and then bring it to market and make all that magic happen. But as I am patently aware of my own business, in order for any entrepreneur to be successful, they've got an absolutely stellar team behind them. And I would love to talk to you today about, obviously you get to work with the incredible Maggie Beer, who's a household name entrepreneur in Australia. And I'd love to chat to you today about what does it take to be that magician behind the scenes, and also that quite unique dynamic between an entrepreneur and their right-hand woman or right-hand man. It's an exciting dynamic, but it's not necessarily always an easy dynamic. So I'm really excited to talk to you about what it takes to be behind the scenes of a really successful business like the businesses that you run.
Fantastic. Yeah, look, it is quite a unique sort of situation, and it's not for everyone, but I do love it.
Yeah, thank you. Well, maybe as a starting point, my dear, would you mind, sorry, I'm just actually fixing my mic because I just realized it was tangled up. So would you mind as a starting point just sharing a little bit about your background to date? So how did you end up to be the CEO of the Maggie Beer Companies?
Yeah, no problem. So I've just quickly up front. So the Maggie Beer Group, or Maggie Beer Holdings Group at the moment, has got four businesses in it, which is Maggie Beer Products, St. David Dairy, a micro dairy in Melbourne, Paris Creek Farms, a biodynamic organic dairy in Adelaide, and recently a hampering gifting business in Sydney. So it's been quite a long path to get where I am, and wasn't really something that I set out to do when I started. I'm from Mount Gambier originally, and I grew up in country South Australia, and then I went to university back in Victoria, and I started my career in tax and business advisory, and I found out pretty quickly that I wasn't someone who liked to sort of account for my time with timesheets.
Does anyone like to do that? I'm not sure. Well, I'm definitely not one of those people.
I think that must be something. Yeah, I don't know. Some people do it, but I learned pretty quickly that wasn't me. So I was offered a promotion there, and as you do when you're that age, I took off and went travelling, and I moved to London, and So I lived and worked in London and actually in Dublin for 4 years, sort of doing lots of travelling and backpacking, and worked in different finance-related roles over there, worked in banking and wealth management. And that was really, I guess, for me, starting to work in businesses and finding out that I actually really like to work in businesses rather than looking at other people's businesses. So when I moved home back to Australia, I moved to Melbourne, and I worked for a really large family office there. And that was where I got my first taste of working for a really entrepreneurial person. The owner of that large family group was very entrepreneurial. There's lots of things going on. And I spent 8 years working there with him. And I learned about buying and selling businesses, what made businesses tick, and more importantly, how to grow them. So this portfolio that I worked on had anything from a winery to a yacht chartering business to hotel amenities company in Asia. Hospitality, it was just you name it, they had it. So I worked there for about 8 years, and I was the finance director. So that was my first board role as well. I was appointed to the board there when I was 34. So I was the only female on that board, but there were some amazing businessmen on that board as well. And so I learned so much about business from these seasoned campaigners as well. So
Chantal, my dear, can I just pause you there for a second, because I only learned what a family office was about 5 years ago. Could you just, for anyone who's not familiar with the idea of a family office, can you explain what it is?
Yeah, no problem. So a family office is really, it's a family who has built up quite a large amount of wealth. They say now to have a family office, you need to have about $120 million worth of assets. So to support having really your own little team to manage those investments. So that's what this office was. We were a really small team. There was only about five of us in the head office, but we managed a large portfolio of operating companies and some passive investments as well, lots of shares and those sorts of things. And so you really just get a really good breadth of experience across a really large number of businesses. And they generally are very entrepreneurial people who run them. And that's why they're sort of, they have such a diverse portfolio.
Yeah. Amazing. Thank you. Just in case anyone wasn't familiar with it, I know I needed to be educated on what
no
it was.
No problem. I hope I explained that.
That's
perfect.
Well, from my understanding, you know better than me. To me, that makes absolute sense. So you were there for 8 years. You were on the board at 34, which is incredible. And what moved you on from there then?
Yeah, so after that, while I was sort of living in Melbourne, I guess I had my little bit of an own entrepreneurial project as well. I invested in a restaurant and wine bar with a couple of other people, and as a bit of a side project. And anyone who's owned a restaurant or wine bar, it's not really a side project. But we did that for 4 years as well. And I guess that was where I discovered my love of food and wine. And that was really, then I thought, okay, well, this is where I want my sort of career to head. So after that, I did a trip around Australia for a year. I'm in a caravan and car just to work out what I wanted to do, which is a little bit unusual at that age, but it was great. and then started working in manufacturing, in food manufacturing, and sort of getting a little bit of that under my belt as well, more that manufacturing, actually working in the nuts and bolts of the businesses. So I was in a role that I wasn't loving at the time, and I contacted a colleague that I used to sit on an advisory board with in Adelaide for a little while, and he told me about the Maggie Beer role, and then I met Maggie, and we really hit it off, and the rest is history. I remember the first time I met Maggie, I went in there, and it was around lunchtime. I went to her house for this it's a very informal interview, and I'm a pescatarian. I have been since I was about 14, so I don't eat meat, and she was very much like, oh, I haven't had lunch yet, so do you want to have, get some pâté and bread? And so very quickly I told her, oh, sorry. Actually, I'm a vegetarian. Is that a deal breaker? But she was very lovely about it. She, I was like, gosh, I don't need a hero put up pâté. But no, look, she was lovely. We just hit it off. Had such a great energy. And then I started working for the Maggie Beer Products Group about 3 months later and moved over to the Barossa, the lovely Barossa Valley in South Australia.
Wow. So what role did you actually join the business in? Did you join as CEO?
Well, they had a CEO in the company and they left in the previous sort of December. So I started in April 2015 and the previous CEO, I didn't meet them and I don't like speaking badly of people, but it hadn't really worked out. And so the culture of the business had been damaged. There hadn't been a lot of investment in people and products and those sorts of things. So so I started the business as COO. They didn't have a CEO at the time.
Okay.
So I was sort of covering sort of both roles. And then it wasn't long after we started that Maggie and Colin, we sort of had a chat about the investment that was needed in the business and new machinery and people. And they also started having a chat to me about the succession plan that they wanted to do. So we built up a really strong rapport and a lot of trust really early on, which is something that's really important, I guess, when you're dealing with the founders, knowing that they can trust you. And so we had a look at that succession plan and what that looked like. And we decided that we needed to sell some of the business to bring more capital in the business. And a lot of entrepreneurs and business owners would know is that usually the business is backed by your own assets, your finances, your house. And so it was time for Maggie and Colin, I guess, to try and take it, unwind a little bit of that and to release some capital in the business. So we started on that project and looked at a number of different options from private equity to having a joint venture. And in the end, we landed on selling 48% of the business to a listed company, which at the time was called Primary Opinion. It's had a few iterations since then. And that was it was a really a shell company. It had a previous life. And at the moment, it didn't have any investment. So we were the only investment in that business. And they raised capital and purchased 48% of the business. And that was really important to Maggie and Colin as well, because they wanted to make sure that before they let go of the whole business, that the people they were selling it to was going to uphold the values and everything. I guess that everything they've built over the years, and that it wasn't going to be sort of turned into something that they didn't like, which is something you lose control of when you sell. Yeah. So I was appointed CEO of Maggie Beer Products in July 2016 when the sale happened and we raised the capital and went to see all the shareholders and did all of that, which was all very new to me, but it was a great experience. And then we set about rebuilding the business and getting new equipment in, launching new products. We had a bit of a business turnaround to complete there. And during that time, the primary, our parent company, they appointed a managing director for that business to grow the parent company. And and so then they, as part of that path, they purchased Paris Creek Farms, the organic dairy, and also St. David Dairy in Melbourne in Fitzroy. So in April 2019, after we'd finished and we had Maggie Beer Products really growing really, really well, very profitable, new products launched out to the marketplace, it was decided to sell the remaining 52% of that business into Longtable, as it was known now. And when that happened, I became the South Australian CEO looking after Paris Creek Farms and Maggie Beer Products. So that was a really interesting time because Paris Creek Farms at that point wasn't going very well and was had quite a poor trading result. So I sort of finished the rebuild at Maggie Beer Products and then it was sort of into Paris Creek Farms and to start the process of doing a business turnaround there. In October 2019, Laura stepped down from the role as MD of Longtable and they asked me to be the acting CEO of the listed company. And then at the AGM in November, which was my first AGM that I had to hold, they appointed me the CEO formally. So it was a bit of a whirlwind that 6 months.
Sounds like it. So that was 2019, that 6 months.
That was 2019. That's right. Yeah. Wow. So a lot happened and it was a lot of opportunities that came up and a lot of just saying yes and just jumping in. But I mean, interestingly, and this is the world I learned of listed companies, they called me on, I think at about 10:30 on the morning, I think it was the 29th of October, to let me know what had happened, that the MD decided to, she wanted to step down and do other things. And I said, oh, can I have a day to think about it? And they said, no, because we have to make an announcement to the market at about 1:30. So you've got a couple of hours. I said, good.
Wow.
So it was, so I was like, right, so this is how this rolls. So anyway.
Things move fast.
Yeah,
so can I ask you then, so when you came into the role at the Margie Beer Group, so was Maggie actually acting as CEO, or was there who was actually kind of running the show when you came
The actual Maggie Beer Products business, the first one?
Yes.
I know it gets confusing as we're talking of joining, but Maggie was very involved in the business from a new product development side of things, and of course she was the owner of the business, so she had a lot of in terms of the day-to-day running of the business, I very quickly sort of took all of that over. I recall Colin, Maggie's husband, who sort of has been her support the whole way through and has been very involved in the business. I recall my first day when I started back in 2015, my first job was to move his computer out of the office for my computer to go in so that he could take a step back from the business.
So he was gripping up a lot of behind the scenes as well.
Yeah, that's right. So he's worked a little behind the scenes. So so I sort of very quickly sort of took over the day-to-day running of the business, and looking over those years, I guess one of the things, but after we'd sold the initial 42%, one of the first things that I did was put a really great team in place. There's some great long-term employees at the Maggie Beer Products business, that we are putting some other great team members in place. They've been my support and have helped me, I guess, achieve everything over the last couple of years.
Yeah, amazing. Mm. So could you give us some headlines? What are the key responsibilities of your role that you do as CEO now of the business?
That's it. So now it's sort of CEO group. So it really is, I guess, my responsibilities are setting the strategy for the group and making sure that everybody is on board with that strategy.
Yep.
And getting that implemented into the business, building and managing great teams. I put that really, really high on my list because I can't get what I need to get done if I don't have those great teams in place.
Yeah.
Employee engagement and culture, managing that and making sure that we've got good morale in the business and people are as engaged as they can be. Working with the board, I operate very much on a no surprises policy, and that's what I encourage my team to do with me as well. That's something that I hold quite strongly. And
could you just step us through that, Chantelle? What do you mean by that? I think I know, but I just want to make sure.
I'm a pretty calm sort of person, and I think when I like my team, encourage my teams to come and tell me everything, good, bad, ugly, whatever it is, as it happens. I like to sort of be in the know, then I can trust that they're looking after it. I operate on that policy with the board as well. It's as things are happening, I feel that that's something they should be aware of, I make them aware of it very early on, and then they trust that I'm managing it. So I just find that way that if people are informed, if things become bigger problems, then it just makes it so much easier to deal with them if they've been there along the journey. And my team, that's how they operate with me as well. And I think if you're going to have that policy in place, then you've just got to make sure that you're the type of person that's not going to get upset and people aren't going to be fearful bringing you any news. And so that way then they can get on with it and they can manage it.
Love that. Goals. Thank you. Was there any other key responsibilities that you have mentioned?
They're looking at growth opportunities. What's next?
Yes.
I think that's the thing that that I'm always working on in the background is what's next? What are we going to do with the business next? Where are we going to go to? Because we can be growing really well now, but it's you just need to be capitalising on the opportunity that you've got. So I have sort of a couple of policies. If we've got some categories that are growing really well, it's like, well, how do we double down on those and grow them even faster? Because there won't be long till competitors are coming in, trying to take that market share off us, but then also having an eye on the future in terms of, well, what's next and how do we get into that, especially in the retailer world, working with supermarkets. It can be such a long lead time to be able to get anything into a supermarket by the time they have their set review dates and then they go in. So it can be sort of 12, 18 months. So you're just always going to be trying to make sure you've got the next thing in the pipeline ready to go. And shareholder engagement, that's a big part of my role now and something that I guess is new since I've taken over the listed company responsibilities. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of, I mean, they're set times of the year, your 6-monthly and your 12-monthly reporting. But you also, just during the year, that we've got sort of your key shareholders, and we've got some really great shareholders, but keeping them engaged, making sure they're along for the journey, but also engaging with potential new shareholders, spreading the story, getting it out there, doing presentations to new groups of people. It's really just being the storyteller for the business and getting the message out there is another key part of my role.
Yeah, that makes sense. And can you share what's a day in the life of your home and work day? What's the typical day look like for you? So I know when you and I met in Adelaide earlier on this year, it's just before I went on Babyland, you were traveling a lot. And we were just talking before I hit record that you've been probably more grounded than you've been for a long time.
I know.
With the multiple lockdowns. So what does a day in the life generally look like from home to work and back home again?
Yeah, look, it's I start my day quite early, and that's something that's probably happened, it's more since I did the CEO role, but I usually get up at around 5 a.m. Mm-hmm. And I'm usually greeted by my 16-year-old dog looking for treats. So that,
that's sweet.
And then I have my lemon juice water. Then I try and meditate for between 5 and 20 minutes, depending on what amount of time I've got to get things done. And then I like to sit down and work for an hour or so and just clear some emails. And to sort of clear my head a little bit. I know I'm sort of on top of things a little bit before that everyone else starts working. Yeah. But it's really important to me to fit in sort of some sort of exercise. So I normally try and jog or run. But it's only usually about 4 kilometres, or else I do 25 minutes in the home gym or something like that, just to really, wake myself up and know that I've done something good for myself for the day before it starts. And then it's really, getting into the day. And my day is, there's never sort of one and the same. And you're right, I used to travel quite a bit. I used to travel probably every week, either to Melbourne or to Sydney. So at the moment that hasn't happened, which was good for a while, but I am looking forward to getting amongst the teams, because Zoom is great, but it's just not the same as being able to walk the corridors and get the vibe of the business and all of those things that you pick up when you're with people. So I probably go to Maggie Beer Products in the Barossa one day a week, and then try to go Paris Creek one day a week, which is up in the Adelaide Hills. Then meetings in the city and work a couple of days from home. But it's usually managing my teams and working with them. There's lots of decisions. I think that's probably something that I've if over the last couple of years, particularly with the sort of listed CEO role with the 4 businesses now, it's that my day is just always absorbing information and making lots of decisions. And that's something I think that is really important. If you're going to be in this role, is that you have to be able to make quick decisions and so that people can move on and get their jobs done. So, and then after that, it depends on what week it is. I'm a stepmom to 2 teenage boys who we have week on, week off. So I try and spend time in the week that we've got them. And, did that go into enough info?
That's lots. Thank you. It sounds full on. I'm like sitting here going, wow, I thought my life was full on, but this sounds extra full on. But you know what I love about how you operate, Chantal, as well, is that you know the things that charge your energy up, and you, as much as possible, try and make those happen. I think that's so, so key, because I can just imagine so much of your role. And actually, you tell me, do you feel like a lot of your role is quite reactive, that you're subject to quite a few other people's demands, or do you feel like you get those windows? I call it maker time, you know, time just to get in flow and get what I need to get done. Do you feel like you get much maker time, or is a lot of it just managing the various different people and stakeholders in the business?
Yeah, look, I don't get a huge amount of it. I remember listening to your podcast, actually, and I did try to go through my diary and block out blocks of time to do things, but because, and particularly with 4 operating companies, and 3 of them are food manufacturing, and one's a quite a large hamper and gifting business, and there's so many moving parts, and so it is really difficult to just block out that time. I do try and be disciplined, but it is a lot of my time is spent, reacting, in a way to what's going on in the businesses. And that's why I think that for me, getting up early is really, really good, because I usually get that between 5 and 8 maybe 7:30,
yeah.
and where I can really have that headspace to say, okay, well, what am I going to do? And I think for me, it's just about being really organized, and I'm quite a disciplined person when it comes to managing my time, and yeah. And just making sure that I just sort of fit everything in that I can.
Yeah, that makes sense. And what's the dynamic like between you and Maggie? So you said that she's the creative force behind the business. How does it work? Like how often do you work together? And is there I'm using the word tension, but I don't mean it in a negative way. I mean, is there a almost like a push pull between the two of you as to where the business moves going forward?
Yeah, look, it's really interesting. Maggie's got such a great energy and an enthusiasm.
I'd love to meet her.
Yeah, she's fantastic. And she's up. Filming the Great Australian Bake Off at the moment, actually, in Sydney.
So oh, wow.
She gets back next week. She's been up there for nearly 6 weeks. So we've talked on the telephone quite a bit over those 6 weeks when she's got time. But yeah. But when we get together, we just create really great energy. And so we normally get together when we're sort of talking about projects and things we want to get done, new products we want to develop. It is good. And I think that that's one of the things I've learned over my career is that I've worked in bigger organisations, and then I've spent probably the last, you know, showing my age, 15, 20 years sort of working in large privately owned groups. And even though this is a listed company now, I still treat it very much as sort of four family businesses that are sort of owned by a corporate entity. And so I do love that entrepreneurial flair. And so I think that's why it works really, really well between Maggie and I, because things can change very quickly, and she's very fast paced and I'm very fast paced. And so we get a lot done in a very short space of time, and that's sort of how we both work. But look, there are tensions sometimes. I remember sort of coming in and with new product development in particular, they sort of be creating these amazing new products, and then we get to the end of it and go, right, okay, well, how much can we get on the shelf? And it was always too expensive because they were beautiful, but there was nowhere we could sell it because they cost too much to make. So I remember we sort of had to reverse engineer that and say, okay, well, let's work it out now and say, okay, well, this is what we need to sit on shelf at in the supermarket, and this is how much we've got for ingredients by the time you take out packaging and all of those components, and sort of work back that way. So that took a little while, I think, but I didn't want to stifle creativity, so I always I always had a buffer in there, so they always had a little bit extra. But,
yeah. But that would be so hard if you're like creating this amazing, amazing product, and then you kind of get the suit comes in and says, nope,
yeah,
it's too expensive.
That's
Can you give an example of a product that was like that?
Oh, we used to make these. They were these amazing parfaits and ice creams and those sorts of things. They just have all of these delicious ingredients in them, and then we get to the end and they'd be too expensive.
Yeah.
And there was a whole. We've got a huge list of new product development that we have, and I think we would still do some of those. And we call them our halo products. And then one day we might get them up somewhere, because it's really important, I think, to be able to do all that creative stuff. You can't just be making stuff for the supermarkets, because that's not what the brand is about either. So, Maggie and I think that's the thing, is she's very creative, and now she's the brand ambassador. So she sits on the board of Maggie B Holdings and I sit on that board as well. So the day-to-day running, she doesn't have to worry about that anymore, but she can still get involved as a brand ambassador, and then creatively when we're looking at new products across the group as well. So I think that works really well, because Maggie's got other interests now. She's got the Maggie Beer Foundation that she's very passionate about, mm-hmm. and improving the food in aged care. So it's I think it works really well now for to fit into Maggie's lifestyle.
Yeah. Love that. And how involved do you get in the new products? So I know you said you're at the Barossa office once a week. Do you get to taste them? Like I that would honestly be my idea of like work heaven if I got to taste food all day.
Definitely. So I, myself and the operations manager, we run the new product development team. And I think this is the thing too, is when you work in these sorts of businesses, you just get so many touch points, and the breadth of the role is so great. So I'm very involved in new product development. So it's between coming up from ideas to helping, I guess, develop flavors And we've got an MPD chef who does all of that. But then we sort of get, yeah, we do it. We get to taste it all.
Amazing.
I think last time I was down there last week, I had about 8 new cheeses to taste, and we had new fruit pastes. And it's, yeah. And when we have the ice cream flavours one, that is, you do have a bit of a sugar rush afterwards, because after doing 10 different ice cream tastings, they're all delicious. But
I can imagine.
Yeah,
and you'd want to go back for seconds for the ones you really liked as well.
That's
so
right.
It would be really challenging.
That's it. And there's no shame in that. Anyone can go back for seconds. I love my cheese, so I'm usually the one sitting there sort of continuing. Well, that's my favorite. I can't bother me what's going on. But it's but again, we as a business, it's really important to be really nimble, and that's one thing we pride ourselves on, particularly in the Maggie Beer Products business, is being really nimble, being able to create products quickly, change things up, get them to market. So we've got we've got quite a small team, but they're amazing, and they get a lot of stuff. They get a lot of stuff done. And then we still get that final sign off from Maggie, because she's just got such a great palate and flavour profile. And it's always when one little thing, she'll be like, oh, maybe it's got a little bit of tarragon in here or something like that. And then you taste again, you're like, yeah, I would never have picked that.
What a talent. It's incredible.
Oh, it is, totally. So
just on food, because I love talking about it. Is there any product that's really surprised you that has gone absolutely crazy once you got it to market?
Yeah, look, we launched as part of our sort of growth, we launched a new cheese range in 2018, and also a new cooking stocks range, so a free range chicken and a beef, and they're, well, the cheese category has now become our largest category in the business. So that did surprise me. I wasn't sure whether the brand would stretch to that. And then the cooking stocks is our third biggest category in the market as well. And I think they've both hit the mark, and particularly the stocks, because they're very true to the brand. They're no preservatives. They're 100% natural. They're like you would cook them at home. And so I think that's what's really resonating with the brand now, and they're the values that we've held the whole way through, is that people are really looking for those products, and they're wanting to look after their bodies and to have that homemade taste, I guess. So look, those categories and products, probably they caught me a little bit by surprise. I wasn't sure how they're going to go. But then there's some other things that we've launched that haven't worked as well as I thought, things that I thought were going to be the next burnt fig ice cream. And we've always launched flavours, and I'm like, right, this is going to be the next burnt fig ice cream. But people just still buy burnt fig ice cream.
It's so good. It's so good.
It is good, so good.
And you know what I love? Sorry, go ahead.
No, you go.
Oh, I was just going to say with the stocks, I think that's it's so wonderful that is one of your top categories, that it means that people are actually cooking at home and almost like running off the inspo that Maggie and various other chefs and cooks have given them, you know, that whole idea of that they are still maybe taking the shortcut with the beautiful stock from Maggie Beer, but they're still preparing beautiful meals at home. So I really love that.
Yeah, look, and that's something that's a space that we've found as the business. I call it the cooking with Maggie category.
Yes.
We better have entertaining and frozen than that. And I think that's the thing, is it's people can use the products. We've just launched a range of bone broths and finishing sauces as well, and they are aimed at the same thing. So just to take that hard work out, we've found that people still love to cook. And if we can take a little bit of the hard work out of it, and it's like they made it themselves, and it's 100% natural, but that works really well for the brand, and it's a sort of a good space for us to play in.
Yeah, I love that. Mm-hmm. So I'd love to ask you about, I'm calling it a user guide for entrepreneurs. So I know you're sitting in the really, I guess, the upper echelon of CEOs when it comes to the size of the brand, and also, of course, your experience and the caliber of CEO you are. If there's someone listening to this episode who is in the early days of handing over the reins of their brand to a CEO or a GM or a managing director, what tips do you have in terms of a user guide for those entrepreneurs on how to really set themselves up for success when handing over to someone like you?
So I think you need to have a really good rapport with the person that you're looking to hand over the reins or the management of the company. You need to find someone, I think, who's got a little bit of an entrepreneurial flair themselves. And I think that's what I love in the business I work in, is I almost get to be entrepreneurial, even though it's not my business, but you still get to have that flair in there. And someone who can work with under a lot of change, and I guess with those things that happen that come with entrepreneurs, it's like they've always got ideas, and someone who can not stifle the creativity and be able to listen to those ideas and I guess sift through them and then be able to say, okay, well, these ones are going to work and let's perhaps put this one, we'll look at that one later. So, but I guess for me, the key, and I think what's put me in good stead all my career, is that I run the businesses and treat them as if they're my own business. So you need someone who's going to have that care factor, and because they're spending your money in terms of when they're running that business. So you want someone who's going to treat that every dollar as if it was their own money, and where they're going to invest it and what return can they get for it. So, and I think just that level of trust, I think someone who, and I think it's that gut feeling, isn't it? Someone you can build rapport with, and someone that you can, that you know you're going to be able to trust, and to run the business in line with your values and ethos, whilst bringing in their own, their own talents to make it grow and to thrive.
Yeah, and anything around, I'm going to use the word visibility. So I know if I'm mentoring a mentee and they're in the process of building out their team, or maybe they've got an existing team that they feel, and for example, one of my mentees runs a psychology practice, and she's got a team of, I think, 10 psychologists now and 2 admin team members. And she was saying she felt like she used to come into the office every day and have chats with the admin team, just check in, do they need anything, are they okay, do they need any support, whatever it might be. And in a recent session that we had together, I said, well, why don't you put in 30 minutes with the admin team a week? That way then they know they've got you, you know you've got them. So you got the visibility without almost like incrementally spending about an hour and 30 minutes helicopter managing them during the week. Do you have any tips on that around how to ensure you have that visibility? Because I know, given my own past experience as well, when you've got someone in who's going to start taking over the business, and it's a really scary thing. It's almost like the umbilical cord is very tight to your own business and your own brand. So do you have any advice on visibility or communication structures that really help? Well, first of all, help your management person get on board, but also that they feel that they've got enough autonomy and flexibility to go and do what they need to do without you, the entrepreneur, stifling them.
Yeah, so that's an interesting one. So so I think, if I think back to when I started at Maggie Beer Products, it was really around that clear communication. We didn't really have a set structure in place in terms of catching up at this time or that time, but I would always be in touch with Maggie and Colin in terms of how the business was going, what needed to be done, and I guess it comes back to that sort of that for me. Managing upwards, I guess, was that really that no surprises sort of a policy. And I think before I would speak to them, I would always make sure that I had all the facts, and then also then had the solutions to any problems that I saw or things that we needed to do. And then putting aside some time aside, like we'd probably sit down probably once a week, and I would just prepare a list of everything I wanted to discuss, and then Maggie would do the same. And we'd sit down and we'd just go through it all and work out what needs to be done, or I'd let them know what I'm going to do. And I think that level of the trust, I think you just get to know someone's working style quite quickly. And I think that level of trust, it just sort of builds, it builds quite quickly. And then they can see, I guess, your working style, and that you're going to do things in the way that that you need them to. But so, and if I think now about, I guess, how I manage my teams, I've got some really great sort of senior people in my business who I really, and I'm probably more about the small chats sort of every morning. There's 3 or 4 of them that I touch base with every morning, just see what the day is planning out, how it's going. And we generally touch base during the day as things are coming up. There's a couple of my team members around sales and those sorts of things that I have more structured every time. At the same time each week, we sit down and we review what's going on, what's happening, what needs to be done. And then I have sort of other structured meetings for sort of marketing and those sorts of things. And I guess in my role now, I've got so many different departments that report to me. They're all a little bit different because some of them are quite fluid and some of them are quite structured. And so I just have to change my management style, I guess, for the team member that I'm working with.
Yeah, almost like I need to be a chameleon.
Yeah, clone myself
for each team that's required. What will they require of you? So good. Now I'd love to talk to you about purchasing businesses, because I know when we met up earlier on this year, you were just about to it was all very, very top secret.
Yes,
you were
was.
Just about to announce the sale, the purchase of a hamper company. And I loved the story. Can you give a little bit of background to the company that you purchased? Because I think it's just such an entrepreneurial fairy tale. I love it.
Yeah, it totally is. Yeah, so just to give it a little bit of context, so as a group, the Maggie B Holdings group, so it was three businesses up until the 21st of May this year, and we were probably 90% exposed to the retail market, and then 10% was really food service, which is where you're selling bulk to people, or hospitality, which was direct to cafes. So we had a lot of exposure in that the retail and dealing with the Coles and Woolworths. They're, like, they're fantastic, but it can also be quite cutthroat. So one of the strategies that I was embarking on was to grow our e-commerce business. And we started this back in 2018, so before COVID hit. And I was going to say luckily, but maybe it was well planned, but I couldn't have planned it. But by the 1st of April 2019, just as COVID had hit, we'd employed a new digital marketing team. We had a marketing plan, all for the really ramping up our e-commerce business for Maggie Beer products. And then COVID hit, and we launched the Cooking with Maggie series, which is where she did little half an hour segments where she was cooking, and that just went through the roof. I think we've got over 6 million views of that.
Wow.
And so everything kind of just timed quite well for the launch of this, not the launch, because we were doing it e-commerce in the background. It was just sort of bubbling along organically, but for us to give it a real good growth, because I thought that was somewhere that we would have a lot of growth in. So over that year and in the past 12 months as well, we're sort of the e-commerce part of the Maggie Beer business was growing, I think 163%. And we were getting just a lot of traction out of that. So one of my strategies was to really, okay, well, let's invest in this. I can see that there's going to be growth potential. And we were going down that path of I was hiring my own e-commerce manager. We're about to relocate the pick pack from the Barossa to Melbourne or Sydney. And so it was quite a big job that we were embarking on to scale it up. So I had a business come across our desk. It was actually late in 2020, the year before, but it was one that we looked at, but at that time it didn't, the size of it was probably too big, but it did come back across our desk again in February the 2021. And at that stage, after we'd seen the growth in the Maggie Beer products e-commerce, it was like, right, okay, well, actually, this fits really synergistically, and this could actually be the way that we can really accelerate the growth in that channel that we want to. So the business is called Hampers and Gifts Australia, and it's made up of Hamper Emporium and Gifts Australia. So there's two businesses within there. Mm-hmm. And to give it a little bit of scale, so the year that we, the previous 12 months to when we purchased, they'd sent out about 260,000 hampers. So it's quite sizable. And so the lady who was really the growth behind it was she lived on Kangaroo Island here in South Australia, and just someone who's just got such a creative eye, and in terms of that customer experience and being able to make products look beautiful. And so she had grown that business for the past sort of 8 or 9 years from scratch, which is really amazing. And one of the things I really liked about that business was that the culture of the company. One of the things that I'm, depending on the situation, a big believer on is that buying businesses that are operating well, and if they've got a really good management team in place, then making sure that those managers stay within the business to continue it to operate. And that's something that we found with this business. So they just had such a great management team, and they were really switched on, really dynamic. And they would be able to take over the management of the Maggie Beer products e-commerce business and really drive that growth for us, as well as just being able to put some of our Maggie Beer products branded food items in their hampers. They didn't have a premium food brand at that time. They had premium liquor brand. And so it was just such a really great synergistic fit. And I could just see, okay, well, it wasn't just a bolt-on for the sake of having a bolt-on, because they were very high growth, very high profitability. and very high cash generating, which was really important to me. Mm-hmm. And then being able to the why we did the transaction was because it would actually then help accelerate growth for the group and give us about 40% of our sales in e-commerce outside of the retailer. So that was a really nice diversification of our revenue. But the big thing that was the standout was really the people and the culture and the belief when I was going through the transaction that we would be able to mesh well as a group and that they would fit into the business. And the integration of that business into the group is fully complete. And it feels like they've been there for a lot longer than they have been, which is less than 6 months. And, and we're achieving some great things together as a group. So it's been really, really exciting to see that all come to fruition.
Amazing. So how involved is that with the owner of the business, the Hampers and Gifts Australia? How involved is she now?
Yeah, so she has kept her role as creative director. So she's recreated all of our Maggie Beer hampers. We've put another 15 hampers in the range, but they've also refurbished, I guess, about 90 of their hampers to have some of our Maggie Beer product stuff in there. So she's very involved on that creative side, in terms of then all the photography and some of the videography. So everything you see on the website is Emily's creative eye, and she's just amazing at it. So in terms of we have touch points, we catch up, but in terms of having to manage what she does, it's very low touch point for me. It's more us talking about, okay, well, what are we going to do in future? What are we going to look at next year? Because in terms of the e-commerce and hamper business, they're already finishing Mother's Day for 2022 at the moment. So because you have to go that far in advance.
Yeah, of course.
we've got planning for next Christmas on the 11th of November. So it never stops. So and her sister, Amy, is the CEO. And Amy is just brilliant to work with. She has a more operational background. So she does the day-to-day management as the CEO of that business. And now we've got our own, we get along really well together, which is great. And then we've got our own sort of nearly 10-person in-house digital marketing team and graphic design team now, which is just a firepower of, I love the digital marketing space. I've learned a lot about it over the last couple of years.
Yeah, sounds like it. Yeah.
Oh, it's just amazing. It's sort of like, oh, I'm going to spend that and then it's going to give me this. So
Like you said, you know, you've got full control, as much as you've got full control of anything, but you've got full control of it. You know, you're not dependent on retailers and their whims or their traffic or where they're at as well.
That's right. I was going to say really quickly, and this is sort of opens up another door for us now, because some of these products that because you just hit the nail on the head, you're not at the whims of the retailer. So some of those things that we really want to do that we can't get on shelf in mass market, we can actually now sell these through our e-commerce. So we've got, I think, about 950,000 touch points now between social media and food clubs and all of those sorts of things, people that we can talk to. And so some of these products now we'll be able to get up through our e-commerce platforms, which is really exciting.
Yeah, the new product development list will be hit hard.
That's right. Well, it is totally. We've reworked out the way we do our new product development totally, and it's the first thing on our list is actually sustainability at the moment, in terms of making sure that all of our packaging is sustainable and all of those. So that's really important to the group. But second to that is, okay, let's change our mindset now. It's not all about what can we get into the retailers. It's about, okay, well, actually, yeah, what can we put through both channels? So it's opened up a lot more.
It's almost like, you know, if we think about social media, if we're on Instagram or Facebook or LinkedIn or whatever, that's really just an audience that we're renting. We don't own that audience. Whereas I always think with your email list, that's something that you own. And I love what you've done, building up your own assets around the clubs and so on. And then that gives you an audience that you can fully own. And I know that's not the right language, but you can create products for that audience and not need to go through the third parties of retailers as well. It's so clever.
That's right. And the engagement levels are so high for those those groups where we put the time in and do all the EDMs and stuff like that. And we've got a lot more that we want to do in that space.
Yeah. So from having instigated and completed the purchase of that other business, are there any tips that you would give to a business owner who might be listening who would like to at some point sell their business? What makes a business easy to sell? Or easy to buy, sorry, from your perspective.
No, I know what you mean. So, yeah, looking at a purchaser coming in, and especially if it's a privately owned family business, and a lot of people who've been in those businesses, it's sort of, it's keep making sure that you've got, when you're ready to do it, making sure that you've got a really good set of books, that you're investment ready, that you've got a clean profit and loss and balance sheet, so you don't have a lot of your personal stuff meshed into the business of the business. Because in coming in as a purchaser, it becomes really tricky to say, well, actually, what is the performance of the business, because you've got all of these other things going through it. So yeah, trying to have a really sort of clean set of P&L and balance sheet, so it's easy to see the business performance. I think for me, and one of the things I often ask quite early up is, what's the why? Why are you looking to sell now? Is it because do you feel like you've reached the growth potential of the business and it's time to get out, or is it because there's other reasons? There's usually a myriad of personal reasons as well as business reasons, or is it because you want to grow and you need investment? So I think having the why and the story, but also having very clearly the story of growth and why you think this should be an attractive opportunity to someone else to look at buying it. And also I think then knowing whether or not you want to stay on in the business, whether you want to exit completely, because everyone's got different plans around that. And it's something I think that people find quite confronting and they're not quite sure.
Yeah.
And really just trying to be as transparent as possible, I guess. I think I find that these relationships work well and sales work well when everyone's as transparent as possible around expectations and also I think in your mind having an idea around what you think the value of the business is, so that that you can have those discussions with the purchaser.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I mean, I think something you've touched on a lot during our conversation is the importance of trust. So I think if someone is looking at buying your business, it's just making sure that you're acting in a way that's going to build trust from day one on both sides.
That's right. And there's nothing worse than sort of embarking on a process, and if everyone's not being upfront and that trust isn't there, and then things coming out of the woodwork later on, and it's just not a position that you want to be in, especially as a seller. If you've if you haven't disclosed everything up front and then something comes out, and then it just becomes very uncomfortable for everyone. It happens.
It's almost like, you know, when friends come over and you just throw everything into the cupboard to tidy up, and then someone goes and open the cupboard. It's like, no, just tell them what's in the cupboard from day one.
That's right. It comes out of the cupboard eventually.
Yeah. Now, can we loop back to you for a moment, Chantelle? Because something I'm becoming increasingly interested in as part of my work is as a mentor, and also a lot of my new book is focusing on energy management. What do you do to manage your energy? So I know we touched on briefly at the beginning of our chat that there are a lot of demands on your energy and your time, whether that's two stepchildren, your partner, the business, four different businesses, multiple teams and so on. What are the things that work for you to charge your energy, and what are the things that don't work?
Yeah, look, I've settled with the term of work-life blending.
Yes, I love this.
I tried the work-life balance for a long time, and I used to beat myself up over it quite a bit. Whereas I just find now you've just got to make everything fit.
Yeah.
And it's sort of everything has a spot, and you just got to we just all work around each other. As I mentioned before, I'm quite organised and disciplined with my time. I do find getting up early, even though I'm not naturally a morning person, but I have found that's really helped. Just give me that extra couple of hours in the day and just taking the pressure off a little bit. I think that's probably one thing when you just feel like you're under pressure all the time. So whatever you can do to try and take that pressure off a little bit. I try and do my exercise. I eat fairly healthily, but I think it's really important as well to try and fit in a catch up with one friend each weekend if I can. I'm sort of very much, I love going out for breakfast, and I'm very big on my grabbing a takeaway coffee and going for a beach walk or something like that at the moment with a friend. I sort of feel that gives me exercise as well as having a really good catch up, and I feel that really rejuvenates me, having spending an hour and a half with someone that I really enjoy spending time with. Yeah, so I think that's really Yeah, really important.
And can I just pause you there just for everyone listening? You know, the fact that the CEO of the Maggie Beer Group can find time to catch up with a friend for an hour and a half the weekend. I mean, I think it's so important that we all do that.
Oh, totally. I know
even this morning I was getting Lexi to school. It wasn't the easiest of school drop-offs. A bit cranky and a bit emotional this morning.
Yeah.
And I just stopped on as I dropped Lexi, and she was fine going into school, thank God. But I turned around and I was walking back, and there was another mom at the school who just said, we had a really nice, probably 30-second chat, but I just felt, I could almost feel it physiologically, just a little boost of just having a nice interaction with another person. It felt really, really good. So I think, making the time to do that, I love that you do that, because I would imagine it would be an easier option sometimes just to plug on and, you know, get some more work done, but to hit pause and use such a beautiful word there, rejuvenate yourself. I think that's so important. So good on you for making that happen.
Yeah, no, look, that, and you're exactly right. You're right. It doesn't have to be. And I think that's what I've found with friends as well. And look, at everyone's busy, is it doesn't have to be a whole afternoon or a day. You can just fit in these nice little slots of time and just do stuff, and they're really good. And that, as you said, the 30-second chat at the school, it's just put you in a different frame of mind, doesn't it?
Yeah, it would do it. I was like, okay, everyone's got crazy kids, let's go.
Yeah, exactly. That is, not just me.
Not just me, it's fine. What she actually said? It was really lovely. I met her at a group thing a few weeks ago, and she said her daughter, she said, that's so funny, I just saw you, because my daughter just said, I think you should invite Lexi's mom to your birthday party. So I thought, like, there was a birthday party next week, and she said, no, my birthday's not till June next year. And I was like, that's so sweet.
That's lovely, isn't it? Yeah.
And that made my morning, you know. It's just such a thing like that that can make your morning. Can we talk books for a minute? Because I think you're also a fellow lover of books. What are the three books that have been the most life or business changing for you?
Yeah, well, it's really interesting because I do read quite a bit, and I was trying to sit back and think of this. I've got two.
I'll take two, don't worry.
And so, look, and there's so many of them. One that I'm reading just finished at the moment, so I'm not sure if it's life-changing, but How I Built This by Raz.
How good is it? I gifted that to all my mastermind for Christmas. Yeah, so good.
It is fantastic. I found that a really good read, and just about all the entrepreneurial things in there and how they've started their businesses. And so I did. I found that one really great. And then a non-businessy one. I was trying to hear a non-businessy one. And I really loved when I read The Alchemist years ago.
Oh, yes, me too.
And, just that whole thing about creating your own pathway, but how if you put stuff out there, the universe works with you to achieve what you should be doing, that sort of thing. So I did really like that book. So that's one that I've bought for other people. And so there's a couple of books.
I love that. Thank you. Yeah. You know what you could get at some point if you want to gift it as well? I bought it for Jack DeLosi years ago. There's a, I'll have to find it and put it in the show notes, but there's a company that you can buy book posters. So it's basically the whole text of a book and on a poster, and then it's Spineless Classics is the business. So it's called Spineless Classics. So I bought it for Jack. So it's the cover of The Alchemist, but it's designed using the entire text of The Alchemist. It's such a lovely gift. You can get lots of kids' books and so on as well. My team actually surprised me when Remarkability, my first book, came out. They got a poster made for me of my book. So, yeah, it's a really lovely gift
really
as well.
Cool.
It's a very, very clever business. I'm like, maybe you could buy them. She's on a purchasing roll.
Well, that's it. I'm just thinking now of a couple of people I could use that as gifts for.
Yeah, they're really lovely gifts. I really love them. And now, last question. There are quite a few execs and also actually a few CEOs that do listen to this show. What's some advice that you would pass on to someone who's maybe they've got the C-suite in their sights and maybe the CEO seat? Well, what's some advice that you would pass on to them sitting where you're sitting now?
Yeah, look, I think if you want to do like a CEO role, I think you have to just make sure that it's a business that you love, that's something that you're really passionate about. Because most CEO roles, they're going to be very demanding of your time. They're going to be all consuming at times. And so being able to have the energy and passion to be able to make your team have that energy and passion is something that I think is really, really important. And something that I've learned, I've worked in businesses where I know that I have to work somewhere they make something, because I've worked in businesses where they've sold services and I just don't get the buzz out of that. Whereas working somewhere where they make something, I get that, and I can sort of, I can visualize it. So I think knowing what makes you tick, and then making sure that you can try and get into a role that is a business like that. But I think the other thing is back yourself. You wouldn't be getting the gig if others didn't think that you were capable. And sometimes it might be a stretch, and sometimes you might have to be a bit of a leap of faith and take that jump and grasp an opportunity. But at the end of the day, you can only do your best, and it's if it doesn't work out, that's okay. You move on to the next thing. But I think really that's really important, is backing yourself and having that confidence to be able to give it a real crack.
Mm, love that. Thank you. Mm. Can I just ask, because I think people often look at someone like you, who's the CEO of an incredibly successful and exciting and dynamic business, and they go, oh, she's probably got it all sorted. Like, I'm sure she doesn't ever experience self-doubt or any gaps in confidence. Like, is that true? Like, do you feel at this point in your career that you're just that you're just blazing ahead, that you don't ever have the mindset challenges?
No, definitely. I think everyone does the whole way along. It's every now and then things will happen, and I'll have to talk to a group of people, or I'll have to ask, oh my gosh, who am I to be standing here doing this? And It has got easier, but look, it still does. They still do creep in, and when that happens, I've just got to be really firm with myself and just like and back myself, because it totally does. And I'm not sure maybe some people get away from that completely, but I think it still lurks there for most of us.
Yeah, well, I know it does for me, for sure. Yeah. And I think what you've said there, it's almost like to be your own coach, isn't it? To be
that
little voice in your own head going, nah, you've got this. I coach myself all the time.
Yeah, and it's interesting, as we've sort of, as the group has sort of turned around, and I've had really good news to share with people and those sorts of things. And it's, making sure that, I don't know, celebrating that and making it exciting, and actually, because sometimes you feel like you're almost boasting, and though that's a problem for me, it's sort of not selling myself or things enough. It's because you're not going to come across as being arrogant or boasting, but I think particularly females, they do that quite a bit, and they probably sell themselves short a little bit as well.
Couldn't agree more. Yeah, mm-hmm. I see it so much in my work, and I experience it myself. I think the key thing, as you've just touched on there, is just to have the strategies to deal with it, and expecting it to come up, not just assuming that it's gone and it'll never pop up again. It's when, it's not if, it's when it pops up again that you've got your strategies ready to go, which I love what you shared there. This was so much fun to talk to you. Thank you. Thank you for being so generous with your experience. Is there anything else you feel like we might have missed that you wanted to share with the audience?
No, I don't think so. No, I think that's it. I think that covered it all.
Thank you so much. And I know you've got me itching to go out and find some Maggie Bear products.
Good. That's what I was going to say. Have a great Christmas.
On my walk today.
Lots of cheese and pate.
Love. Oh, thank you. Wise words.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining me.
Okay. See you. Bye.
Thank you. There you have her, the wonderful woman and CEO that is Chantal Millard. You can find Chantal on LinkedIn. I'll pop a link to her LinkedIn profile in the show notes. And if you want to find out more about Maggie Bear Holdings, you can visit the website, maggiebeerholdings.com.au. Thank you so much for joining this week's episode. I will see you again for another episode of this entrepreneurial season in 2 weeks' time. Until then, sending you much love, and I'll chat to you then. Thank you for being part of this week's episode. It was remarkable to have you. I am always keen to hear your thoughts, questions, ideas, and suggestions for future topics for the podcast. So please get in touch on Instagram. My handle is @LorraineRemarks, and through my website, lorrainemurphy.com.au. If you're enjoying what I'm putting out here, please do rate, review, or subscribe to the podcast so more people can find out about it and we can build this special community. Or even better, do all three. Chat to you next week.